I am Plant on the Line. This is thecommentary.ca. Regular readers and listeners will perhaps know that I don't read very much fiction. I guess I don't have the imagination to understand or enjoy it, though I'm fascinated by the craft of many writers and novelists practice. Recently, a collection of short stories hit my desk, Darwin's Bastards, Astounding Tales from Tomorrow. 23 stories are collected herein, stories that take us to future times, parallel universes, and provide many a dystopian tale. The stories were selected and edited by my guest now, Susie Gertner, a writer and journalist who is creative director of Vancouver Review's Blueprint BC Fiction series. She was a senior editor at Saturday Night and the author of the acclaimed story collection, All the Anxious Girls on Earth. She has a National Magazine Award for Fiction, among other awards for her magazine journalism. Among the writers featured in this collection include Douglas Copeland, William Gibson, Lee Henderson, Anoush Irani, Annabelle Lyon, Stephen Marsh, who's been on the program before, Jan Martel, Adam Lewis Schroeder, who will be on the program shortly, Timothy Taylor, and many others. The book is published by Douglas and McIntyre. On Friday, April 16th, a futuristic costume party launches the book. A number of the authors will be at the Wise Hall at 1882 Adnack here in Vancouver. It's at 8 p.m. Please welcome to the Plant on the Line program, Susie Gertner. Good morning, Ms. Gertner.
Good morning.
Thanks for joining us. Now, is this this collection, is this a great way to get into the fiction that's contained here in the sort of genre of fiction?
I'm not sure I understand the question.
Like, is this a great introduction into sort of speculative fiction?
I would say not, because this is sort of a campy take on the genre. The book is not... I didn't envision it as speculative or science fiction. I envisioned it as mostly dystopian and satirical, and there's maybe a third, a quarter of the stories that could fall into the realm of science fiction, but they're being written by writers who aren't genre writers. So they're fiction writers and really good stylists and writers who have sort of succeeded in short fiction across the country. And I approached them to see if they might have fun with the idea of setting a story anywhere in the future, whether that's the day after tomorrow or in the year 2050 or whatever take on dystopia they wanted to do, which is not necessarily futuristic. It could be just a parallel universe, or what if something turned in history and went the other way and this is where we're at now kind of thing.
And is this a sort of fiction that you like reading yourself?
I like reading this kind of fiction. I like reading a lot of fiction, but I'll tell you the genesis of the book was that I was coming across a number of stories by some of my writing students at UBC. I teach in the grad program, in the MFA grad program at UBC. And the stories were just, they just happened to want to write about certain things, like the cloning of Christ or Victoria circa 2015, so only about 5 years in the future, but when the whole idea of terrorist attacks have been heightened. So just looking a tiny bit to the future to have that bit of leeway to imagine something a bit further removed from what we're experiencing today. And at the same time, as you mentioned, I have a background in journalism as well, and I probably consume newspapers and magazines with as much interest and enthusiasm as I do fiction. And what I was finding was I was finding newspapers and magazines more and more interesting vis-a-vis, you know, the world today than I was finding fiction, which wasn't stepping up to the plate for the large part. Mostly I'm talking novels and short fiction. A lot of it just wasn't addressing what's happening today and what the repercussions might be for us, you know, as a society or a world society in the future. So the book is intended to be fun and thought-provoking, the stories collected in Darwin's Bastards.
And I guess fiction is a great way to look ahead as well, right? I mean, there's probably no better way, I suppose, in writing.
Well, I would say many nonfiction writers could look ahead equally, you know, based on scientific evidence and what's happening in technology and things like that as well, and the economy.
It's just a great way. I mean, when we look at the list of writers here, I mean, they're not really known for, most of them are not known for their nonfiction work. So I think that creative angle of it, that perhaps is a great way to approach it.
Sure.
Was that the goal, though, to do that, to get these people? Because some of these writers, they're not known for speculative fiction at all.
Most of them aren't, except for William Gibson, and more recently Doug Copeland. His most recent novel is set slightly in a future where there's no longer any bees, Generation A.
Mm-hmm.
And but you know, so he's mucked around a bit with that idea and the idea of dystopia a little bit in his fiction. And William Gibson, of course, the godfather of cyberpunk. But other than that, no, these are not writers known for writing, you know, stories set in any kind of future.
So when you went to them, did you have a list of writers to begin with that you wanted to put in here?
Yeah.
And did they? I mean, did some turn you down, perhaps?
Did all say yes? They all say yes? They didn't all say yes. I had about 12 people turn me down, but all very graciously, and they either turned me down. There were three categories. Either they just didn't think they could write this kind of thing, or they were super interested, but the time frame was wrong. I mean, you're always catching writers in the middle of deadlines and different things, and there's only so much you can squeeze out of yourself. And the third category is people who gave it a try because they were really enthusiastic and then emailed back saying, I just can't make it work, but if you ever do this again, I really want to be in it. I'm getting a lot of that now that the book's finally come out, the people who want to be in Son of Darwin's Bastards, if we do such a thing.
Yeah, and the role as editor, I mean, when someone submits their piece to you, does that involve a lot of editing?
In my case, it does. In some editors' cases, it doesn't. There are some stories in here that I basically just had to do a tiny bit of tweaking back and forth with the writer. There's other stories by phenomenal award-winning writers that we had to do five substantial drafts back and forth. So it's a whole range depending on how, you know, what kind of shape the story is in when it comes to me.
I'm always tethered to my BlackBerry. There's a story in the book, I understand, about the future of the device.
Yeah, a BlackBerry called the Mother. They're called Mothers, the mother of all BlackBerries, that can basically tell you what you should be doing next based on cumulative evidence of what you have done in the past. So it sort of tells you what response you should have to a particular situation, you know, weighing how you've reacted to different situations in the past and what your most probable outcome will be. That's by Sheila Hetty, a Toronto writer, who has done a lot of work of great imagination, not necessarily futuristically set, but she's done a lot of urban fairy tales and really some really wonderful otherworldly fable-like writing.
Now, William Gibson, he has a piece in the book about Kitsilano.
It's a short story set in Kitsilano, and it's largely, yeah, Kitsilano's quite a character in the story itself.
And then how does it look in the future?
It's not set in the future, the story. If you'd read the book, you would know.
Okay.
The story begins in 1979 and ends right after the election of Obama. And it's a guy who goes on a... Dougal Descarnate is the name of the story. And Dougal goes on a bad acid trip in 1979. And basically, he doesn't die. He leaves his body. So his sort of self and intelligence is separated from his body, which goes on to recover and become an accountant living in Richmond, I think, or Burnaby. And then the discarnate part of him continues to not age and can't leave the boundaries of Kitsilano. And it's written as if William Gibson has befriended this fellow. They watch movies together and talk about movies and talk about books and things like that.
Does Canada play a large part in the setting? I mean, is this a book that I mean, it's Canadian writers, right? Does this, the place of Canada, does
some
it
of the ma- stories are very strongly set in place and very recognizably Canada. Some of them are set in sort of an unnamed locale. Some of them are very clearly set in the U.S., so there's a variety. Some of the ones set in Canada, you mentioned William Gibson's story, set in Kitsilano in Vancouver. Adam Lewis Schroeder's story is set in B.C., but references other parts of Canada, Ottawa, and other parts, but very, very Canadian story. Laura Trunke, a Victoria writer, has set a story in Victoria, B.C., circa 2015, but it's also part of the story takes place in Iran. And so there's a whole range. Pasha Mala has written a story called 1999, which basically takes place, again, not in the future, but in the past, the first day of the new millennium. You know, so it starts at the stroke before midnight, 1999, and the story takes place in the first day of 2000. And the protagonist is Canadian, but travels to the U.S. because the only man left alive in the world is the artist formerly known as Prince. And on every single radio station, on any airwave you can pick up, it's just Prince asking all the women in the world to come to a studio at Paisley Park in Chicago to remake the world. So everybody kind of journeys there from different parts of the States and Canada. So that gives you a bit of a sampling.
Yeah. How long have you been at UBC?
How long have I been...
teaching there.
5 years.
Yeah. And as a writer, as someone who enjoys reading writing, is that fun to be among students of creative writing?
When they're good.
Yeah. Do you see a lot of bad writing?
No, I see a lot of great writing because I teach in a master's program and I teach advanced short fiction. And I teach very small classes. It's an online program, so my students are all around Canada and down in the States. And last year was a Canadian, was living in Hong Kong. And our classes take place written online, so
yeah.
The level of discussion and everything is just phenomenal.
Yeah, and the writing that you're reading there, does it leave you hopeful that there'll be great writing in the future?
Yeah, I mean, there's two stories that I've mentioned already that are by former master's students of mine that have gone on and finished their theses and have books coming out, and they were the inspiration for this book. And one is Laura Trunke's story, Fire from Heaven, the one set mostly in Victoria, involving terrorism. And Matthew J. Trafford, who is a Toronto writer, who has his first book of stories coming out next year, and his story in here called The Divinity Gene is about the cloning of Jesus Christ, among other things. And these were written, you know, by students. I mean, we're not talking very young students here, you know, fresh out of high school. These are graduate students in writing who've got some licks behind them and then come and hone their craft in a workshop setting.
Yeah. You're also at Vancouver Review, right?
I am fiction editor at Vancouver Review, that's correct.
Yeah, I'm a subscriber to that magazine, and I find it very interesting to read. It comes out, what, 4 times a year, right?
Yeah, it's a cultural quarterly, so they do investigative journalism, cultural commentary, you know, fiction, poetry, but unlike literary magazines, it just has one poem and one story an issue, and the rest is a lot of commentary and arts coverage and political coverage and things like that.
Yeah. This book, Darwin's Bastards, it's relevant now, right?
Yes.
And was that...
I want to make a point when and this William Gibson made this point when we were doing an interview together on CBC just yesterday.
Yeah.
That, you know, whenever you're writing setting something in the future, whether you're setting it a year in advance or 2,000 years in advance, or writing about a dystopia that's set in a vague past time, you're really writing about today. You're setting it somewhere else in order to make a comment about the way we live today. And that's important to bear in mind. And that's what makes these stories, besides being fun and engaging, that's what makes them so relevant.
And it's a hopeful book, right?
Oh, I wouldn't say that.
No?
I would say it's quite distressing in a very humorous way. And some of the stories are not humorous, but some are. But it's pretty dark. Most of the visions are dark, but there's elements of hope. There's some upbeat stories. There's a number of love stories, surprisingly. And, so there's a variety, but overall it's pretty dark.
So this party on Friday, do you have an idea of what the costumes will be like on Friday?
I have a vague idea. I'll tell you some of the things I know people are dressing as. I'm doing a sort of Mad Maxine meets future club chick kind of look. In fact, once we finish the interview, I'm going out to look for a gas mask for myself. My husband is going as Arthur Dent from, as people who know Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy will know, Arthur Dent is the main character who travels through space and time in a bathrobe with holding a towel. And another friend is going more with the kind of Darwin evolution gone wrong theme, is going to be half man, half ape, have a monkey tail and monkey paws, but come in a, you know, a suit like a man. So that's a, gives you a few ideas.
Yeah. How do you think the book will do?
I think, I don't know how it will do. It's already doing great. It's already, before its official pub date, it was already on the BC bestseller list, which is fantastic. And it's moving up. I think it's at number 8 right now.
Yeah, the people at Douglas and McIntyre, when they sent the book over, they sent a button here. I'm one of Darwin's bastards. I've got it right in front of me.
And are you?
Yeah, I guess so. Yeah. I will read the book. So.
Well, pick and choose. It's like a box of chocolates, right?
And they also sent a mask. Mm-hmm. That's the thing on the cover, right?
Yeah, we're having masks at the launches. I'm also doing one in Toronto on the 19th of April. So flying out there to do that show. And we've got these masks that will be at the door for people who haven't come in costume but may want to get involved in the spirit of the thing.
Yeah. What's next for you after promoting this book? And
well, I've just finished and just wrapping up, and I'll be working on edits all summer of my own next collection, which is coming out next spring in exactly a year from Penguin Books Canada, their Hamish Hamilton imprint. So that's sort of what's immediately next for me.
Well, continued good luck with the book. Congratulations on Darwin's Bastards.
Well, thank you very much, and thanks for your interest.
You're very welcome. The book is called Darwin's Bastards, Astounding Tales from Tomorrow. It's published by Douglas and McIntyre. The editor of this collection, Susie Gartner, on the line in Vancouver. I'm Joseph Plunter.